This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to Out of Time Film Podcast. My name is Tom and as always I'm joined with my co-host John.
Hello.
And this week we're talking about Mad Max Fury Road.
Hell yeah. This is a film that I've been so excited to rewatch years after, because I remember watching Mad Max on a small TV screen on Netflix and I was just like amazed about it. But I was like, something's not right. I had to watch it on the big screen. So recently I watched it with you, Tom. And this is your first time watching Mad Max Fury Road, so I was really excited for you. And man, what experience to watch on the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get this at the cinema first time round. And I've had the DVD for like 6 years or something.
You just keep it to yourself.
I watched the first two Mad Maxes with my dad as well. I never watched Beyond Thunderdome, which is the third one. And eventually, you know, when I knew that this was going to happen on the pod, and so, you know, it was kind of like the clock was ticking. I was like, I need to watch this film one day. And then I saw that it was coming back at the cinema and I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the moment I've been waiting for. And honestly, I am so very glad that is the case. I feel like we talk about it quite a lot, but there are just some films that to watch them not at a cinema in many ways is doing them a disservice. And I know that, like, realistically, a lot of films you can't watch at the cinema, but whenever they re-release films, I always try to watch them. So I think they're re-releasing The Matrix soon, which is really exciting. I would love to watch that on the big screen again. But yeah, Fury Road, I was just stunned. It was the second biggest screen in our cinema and it was like having your brain squeezed constantly. Mm. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, this film was so dialed up to 11 and I just thought it was awesome.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. It is an amazing experience and you shouldn't miss it on the big screen. It's just one of those cinema experiences that feel revolutionary. Once you learn about the facts about the film or the process behind it, it's just mind-blowing and how much time and dedication you put into this. One of the big things about Mad Max Fury Road is, as you said, it's just a film that feels so dense, yet it has a plethora of everything. It's everything in that film. And one of my biggest worries rewatching this film was, is it good as I remembered it? Or is there too much action that I remembered? Because watching the first time, it's just mind-blowing. And then watching it the second time, it just feels like I've entered the gates of heaven and I just feel like I'm watching something that is incredible. And I feel like that is what cinema is missing today, that revolutionary going beyond CGI in this film. So it's just, please, if you haven't seen Mad Max Fury Road, I highly recommend. So I do have the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is great. You should watch it. I agree.
Go to John's house and he'll play the Blu-ray for you. That's the guarantee. I'll put his address in the description below and you can just come over to his house. Watch it on his TV because you know, we always talk on this podcast about the cinema, but really what we mean is John's TV. That's the peak of the cinematic experience. But it's been nearly 10 years since this film came out. And I feel like this film has been hyped so much. There hasn't been a single person I've heard talk about this film who hasn't told me how incredible it is. In many ways, this film wouldn't have been able to live up to the hype. I was incredibly excited. I was really, really ecstatic to kind of see this film for the first time and experience it. Obviously, with Furiosa coming out, there's a lot of stuff. George Miller, I'm a fan. We did a video on 3,000 Years of Longing a couple of years ago, and I really liked that as well. I really liked the first two Mad Max. This film just was set up to be a disappointment, and then it wasn't. It really hit every single one of those. Like, there's a reason why people like it so much, and I'm not mad at that at all. I think a lot of people come back to this film and say, oh, it's not as good, but I think it's fantastic. And I know that it's only my first time, but it really is a marvel in the way that it's created. It blends CGI and practical effects seamlessly. And I must say, there are moments where the green screen specifically is pretty noticeable, but it almost feels intentional. It almost feels like there's a surrealist quality that this film has that makes all of that stuff kind of work. I know that there's been some criticisms about Furiosa, that the trailers look quite CGI heavy. I don't think they're that much heavier in CGI than this film. Like, there are definitely some moments where I was like, this is very clearly green screen, this is very clearly added in, but I think it works all the better for it, especially with blended with those practical effects. And I feel like this year we're getting a lot of great stuff like that. The Fall Guy, there's a load of stunt work and practicality in that, as well as some, you know, CGI work. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, all the apes are CGI, but all the locations, it's all practical, and it really blends the two so well. Dune, what do I have to say more? Dune Part 2, like, just the way that that uses landscape and location and practicality is also incredible. Again, something that we talk a lot about on the pod. The tide is kind of turning for cinema, and it feels good. Like, all the films that are pumped out and cookie cutter and made with little soul and massively over bloated budgets, those films kind of feel like they aren't getting a hold. This film, I found out recently, it didn't even make $400 million worldwide. You would think that that was a flop, but critically it was so successful and audiences loved it so much, and it has left such an impact on, you know, this must be one of the best action movies of the 2010s, surely. It wasn't a huge financial hit, but it's really stuck with people because of how it was made, because of all those factors. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it's a film that is so loved. And I remember Empire did the best films of the 21st century, but they talked about, I know Tom's going to get the Empire subscribers cover.
And I have my collection of Empire covers here.
They're awesome, by the way. One of them, Empire did the best films of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And the highest rated, it was Mad Max Fury Road. And they did a full-on interview with George Miller about the film. And it is incredible how this film has so much love. It's pure insanity. I recommend you look back at Empire's discussions about Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, Empire is a fantastic film magazine. If anybody, especially people in the UK, if you're looking for a film magazine to get into, that's the one. We've both been subscribers for a long time. I'm holding my collection of subscriber covers, and the one that John was just talking about is March 2020. Brilliant time that was. And it was, the 100 greatest movies of the century so far.
There we go. That's
which
it,
is 100. Like, this century has been some cracking films. You know, we're only talking about as of 2020. And that's at number one. The people voted that. I mean, that is impressive. That's really great. I mean, I wouldn't personally put it that high.
Yeah, if you think about it, if you look in that list, it's a film that really stands out. And it's a film that you cannot miss. It's got something unique about it. I mean, it's got unique aesthetic, such unique production design, with the cars and also the craziest action scenes.
Indeed, when you look at blockbusters, this film kind of solos a lot of the most popular blockbusters of the 21st century. In the Infinity Saga, MCU, they made 23 films, and Fury Road beats nearly every single one. I might even go as far as say that Fury Road is better than every single Marvel film. Bold claim, I know.
I agree, it solos it, yeah.
It kind of does, you know, I'm a massive, massive Star Wars fan, but I kind of don't think that any Star Wars film in the 21st century is as good as that. Like, honestly, I remember I used to watch Chris Stuckman, and I still have massive admiration for the guy. I think he's fantastic. One of YouTube's absolute best, and definitely an inspiration for myself as a film reviewer. He did a ranking of best films of 2015, and I remember at the end of the video, he was like, I'm really struggling to decide what did I prefer. Did I prefer Force Awakens or Fury Road? And I want to say that he gave it to Fury Road, and I was like, what do you mean? And I hadn't seen it at this point. And now I'm like, yeah, no, actually, fair enough.
Yeah, should we get into spoilers?
Yeah.
We have to talk about the score.
Ooh, yes.
When I watched it on Netflix, it didn't have that same appeal to like really feeling the film, its insanity, its craziness of Mad Max, the wastelands. But when I rewatched it, I listened to the score very closely with Junkie XL's score, and it was so synthetic. Like, you see it and you hear it at the same time, and it's like, whoa, it's incredible. And once you watch it and hear it at the same time, there's so much going on. It feels like you're running through the music, really. You're running through it, and there's so many things passing by. It has some amazing motifs between Nux and Capable, and it's just crazy listening to the score. I was like, that is one of the big things. We watching this film, I was just amazed at how it just matched up with the insanity of traveling through the wastelands and just seeing so much action going on with the cars.
Yeah, I think I've had an interesting relationship with Junkie XL as a composer. I've always thought that he works better when working with other people. I certainly think that Batman v Superman, for instance, he does a fantastic score there, and I think that is kind of down to the fact that, like, you know, he works with Hans Zimmer. I think when it comes to Zack Snyder's Justice League, for instance, I wasn't quite as interested in that score. It felt just a bit too much, really. But this score, it kind of works that it's a bit too much. The whole thing feels like this clash of metal. You've got the electric guitar and, like, you know, these really imposing drums, and it works for this relentless chase sequence.
I mean, it's
this
overwhelming.
Film is, exactly. This film kind of works really well because it's just this one long chase sequence. And it's really great. And all of that was so good. And I was like, you know what, this is working for me. But not only the score, but the film really makes or breaks by its small moments. Like if it was all explosions and stunts and action, that's all great. But where the film really got me was the moments where they take a break to explore the characters. They are just some of the film's best. It is exactly why it works. It gives you that emotional investment, especially when the night passes and all the characters go and they meet the mothers and find out what's happened to the green place. There's this loss of hope and they kind of regain their confidence, you know, the confidence enough to go back and face Immortan Joe. That is where you get the emotional investment that makes the climax and the finale so satisfying. I think particularly, as you were saying, with Nux and Capable, like their little romance that happens in here is so tender and so beautiful, so surprising. And the music is just this very simple piano melody, which I think is really surprising, especially for a character like Nux, who is just the craziest part of Immortan Joe's army, you know, wanting to go to Valhalla and all that. It's all in the small moments that this film works, because the action works so well, but it means nothing if you're not emotionally invested.
Yeah, and adding on to that, it's crazy how much the story develops in 2 hours. You know, there's a lot of action scenes, there's so much going on. But the incredible part about it is that you get to know the characters quickly and you feel like there's so much emotional moments. I mean, Nux, he's crazy. You don't really understand him, but then there's that beautiful moment between Nux and Capable meeting for the first time. And it was just like, wow, okay. Somehow they just connected to the audience with that and have this relationship in such an action-packed movie. And the most valuable things about characters is the quiet moments that you get to understand. I mean, how do you connect an audience with such action-packed scenes? There's so many moments in there that just really shines. And one of the big things is that, well, you got to see Tom Hardy as Max. But the character that really takes center stage with this whole film is Furiosa. And she is such a badass. Like, I gotta say, that's one of the best characters that I've seen on screen. And she has such an interesting arc in this movie. She builds this kind of friendship with Max. And then Max kind of understands with her. And then he slowly gains trust with Furiosa and learning about working together, really. Again, the quiet moments, one of my favorite was when Max actually introduced himself and said, my name's Max. And it's just like you slowly get to see these characters come into place. And then Max, he doesn't speak much.
Yeah, Tom Hardy doesn't get to speak much with his strangely unplaceable accent. Like, what's he going for here? Is he British? Is he American? Is he Australian? Like, because like Mad Max is traditionally Australian, but Tom Hardy's like, no, I'm gonna create my own accent for this.
Yeah.
It's like brilliant. Tom Hardy is a great guy at doing voices, you know, Mad Max and Bane and Venom. He just loves doing all his little wacky voices.
Well, a guy, he knows how to get these voices.
Yeah, I really love seeing him and Furiosa. It's not traditional how they build their friendship. It's small moments. The reason why his payoff of what's your name and him saying my name's Max, the reason why that works so well is that she only asks him once. They don't linger on it, but they give us enough to know that, right, okay, so he's not going to reveal who he is because he doesn't trust her. And it tells us about who she is, tells us about who he is, and that eventual moment where he uses himself to give her blood, bearing in mind that he was forced to be a blood bag at the beginning of the film and now he's doing that willingly. Just really, really good character work. It's really effective. It's really efficient. This film was actually designed to work as a silent film. If you don't listen to any of the dialogue, it's designed to still flow. And I think
very
it does.
Visual story time.
Yeah, I was thinking the whole time, it's like it does really work. I think that Furiosa is a really, really great example of a character. Many similarities to Max. You know, she's somebody who keeps everything kind of within, and we've already seen her like fully express her emotions. There's a moment when she finds out about the green place where she falls to her knees in the desert and she screams out, and it's brilliant. It really is. Deciding to do the film about her next, the prequel, brilliant. That is a fantastic idea. I'm so excited for that concept. I'm sure that Anya Taylor-Joy will do a fantastic job. Also, I'm pretty sure that Chris Hemsworth's character from Furiosa is one of the gang leaders from Fury Road. You know, the one who they kill at night who has the big lights? That looks like the same guy. It's the nose. It's the nose. Because they're giving Chris Hemsworth this prosthetic nose and it looks kind of like a young version of that. I just a thought that I had. I remember I pointed at the screen.
That's
and you
an interesting
at me, you were like,
theory.
What you want
I am
about? Yeah.
I haven't thought about that really. But the strongest part of this film is the editing. It's overwhelming in a very good way. There's so much that happened on screen. But one of the things that you don't realize about the editing is that all the shots are placed center stage of everything.
Yes.
So like what you see in the middle, it allows the audience to process. For example, if you hold a pen in the middle of the screen, it just gets the audience's attention very quickly. So that's how they did the action sequences, is that they shot everything aligned with the camera in the middle of the shot. And that was just the most interesting things, just to have the audience to process what's going on. Because again, this is a very action-packed movie and there's so many things that go in at once, but that's just the most impressive thing, is just the editing and the color grading of the film, which is so cool. It doesn't constantly change, but there's two distinctive color grades that I thought it was so interesting. Like the daytime, like it's so abrasive, it's yellow, it's dust, it's sand, it's a desert. Nobody likes sand like Anakin. But at night, it's such a different place. It's just like that old school desert apocalyptic feel to it. It's just like you as the audience, you don't feel like you're supposed to be there, but it's just like this massive screen and it feels weird but exciting at the same time. And I gotta talk about quickly about the frame rate, because the frame rate changes, which is so interesting, because at the beginning it was a very different speed and it throws you off, but it's just like you are trying to adjust to the world of the film and it's like, whoa, I know this is gonna be crazy.
Yeah, it really works. There are some really cool moments where Max has these visions and the frame rate is speeding up and slowing down. There's the little girl puts her hand out and Max puts his hand up, and there's that moment where he saves himself. He's got all these demons that are following him, and this is kind of this spiritual journey for himself, learning to save people again. That's so great. The style of the film is brilliant. All these cars with all these spikes on, and there's people on big sticks flying everywhere, and there's the one who's playing the guitar, and there's like the giant amp behind him, and like the flames coming out of it.
It's so
ridiculous
metal.
And it's amazing. Like it all works so well. It's also distinctive. So you know, everything, even like Furiosa's design, you know, which is like the grease paint on the top half of her head and like the metal arm, it all really works, you know, like Nooks and his mouth, all of those things look so Immortan Joe, who is just the worst and just, you know, such a horrible character and such a terrifying design as well. There's a lot of like Darth Vader-esque elements in there, but also, you know, like the kind of plastic body and the
my
and
abs, respirator. Okay, my abs.
These are my real abs. It's like,
my real abs.
And he is so scary in like, you know, what he represents for these women who are trying to run away from him, with one even trying to come back to him at one point just because of the fear of the unknown and like, you know, the way that he treats all of them really as vessels. And I think that's all amazing. The one thing that I would say is a bit of a criticism is that I didn't really feel the connection between Furiosa and Immortan Joe. And there's a moment at the end when Furiosa says, "Remember me?" And I think that really would have hit harder if we'd have kind of explored that a little bit more. I think maybe Furiosa might be the thing that will kind of add a bit of context into that, which is exciting because I think I did see Immortan Joe in the trailer. I also want to say in terms of the editing as well, that's actually George Miller's wife.
Yes.
So that's really cool that they're so close to like the story.
Yeah, and that's George Miller's wife editing an action film for the first time, because she did a lot of drama or romantic films, I believe. And another thing as well that I want to briefly talk about is the film is quite simple. They go from point A to B, but then they realize, oh, we need to go back to point A. So that is like, if you take that out, it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty basic. What they really nailed that feel of Mad Max, which is the existential dread in this film. It's just like, it feels so pointless. And it's just like, why we have come this far if there's no safe haven and no place for Earth or for plants or for wildlife? I just think that is like the hard hitting reality of this story. And it's just like, it tries to give on hope, but then they go, nah, we go back. We go back to the place where Immortan Joe was ruling. They succeed so well is that existentialism of the story. And it's like, there's no hope and there's no ending for these characters, but it's just the ending that feels like it's so justified. I really like that. I also agree about there isn't that connection between Furiosa and Immortan Joe, but again, Furiosa, I do hope they work on that connection. It just feels like there's that emotional weight and it wasn't implemented at all in this film. So they could have done something about it. But overall, what a crazy film.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's about freedom. It's about fighting for what you have, what you could have. There's the old women as well who serve as that representation of preserving things and, you know, like the past. And there's the one with all the seeds that, you know, there's really, really great stuff to unpack. You know, you could really talk about this film for hours and what it all means. The ending as well is so triumphant and so simple. Like, it ends really quickly, but that really works. You know, that final look between Furiosa and Max, you know, like, it all just, this is a film that I will happily watch again and again. They might even re-release it next year. year at the cinema again for its 10th anniversary, and I might go back just to see it because it was so fantastic.
I'll buy all your stocks. I'll buy all the Blu-rays.
Yes! I want to have stakes in Mad Max, the franchise.
I want to buy all the cars from Mad Max.
We're moving to Australia.
One last thing is how long this film was in pre-production. The time is a bit weird, but it's between 15 or 30 years they've been in pre-production trying to make this film, and George Miller was like, no, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it one day. And the most impressive thing was the storyboards. There's a great behind-the-scenes video about how they visualized the story. They hired a graphic artist, I believe. They did all the storyboards. That was really cool. So, yeah.
Yes, and I have two emails here.
This is a record-breaking moment, my guy. Yes. Oh, my God.
So, our first email, this is from Agri Mwani. Very simple. Just says, hey, Tom and John, the Outtime Film Show on YouTube is quite interesting. I'm intrigued and following. Keep it up. Thanks very much, Agri.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, and then we have one from Samuel Masson about Fury Road, the man himself. And he says, hello there. Fury Road is one of the best action films in recent years. Stunts and set pieces, bizarre and intriguing characters, and a great score. Oh boy, this is a good one. The explosions feel so real because they are real. The chase through the sandstorm is so well done. It's one of the very few times CGI is used in the film, but it still works. You really feel the scale of the storm and the weight of the sand once they raced inside it. The way the sound is utilized is also great. Zoomed out shots to show distance are silent to really emphasize the scale of the wasteland. It's a small detail, but really adds to the depth of the filmmaking. And the amount of practical stunts in this film are ridiculous, especially the scale of them. It's fitting that last episode was Fall Guy, where the focus was stunt crew, because they deserve a lot of plaudits here. The score is awesome. Junkie XL did fantastic on this. The track Brothers in Arms is one of my favorite pieces of movie score ever. The whole build-up and then an orchestral drop to go along with Max and Furiosa shooting motorbikes out of the sky. Sign me up. There were so many great and quirky characters throughout. I'll just list a few and see what you guys think of them. The Bullet Farmer, Immortan Joe, Polecats, Rictus Erectus, the People Eater, and of course the Doof Warrior, who has a flamethrower guitar, because why not? There is a vast array of characters and all of them have their own uniqueness and lets them steal the spotlight for just a little bit. This film is an absolute joy and blast to watch. It's one of my favourites. So you know what? 11 out of 10, baby. One of my all-time favourites. Thanks for the hard work, gents. Now go make yourselves a cuppa. Take care, Sam. Also, weekly meme. Me as a kid showing my parents the dance I learned, brackets, I'm just spinning, witness me! And it's just the guy like jumping from one thing to another.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love that. I love the memes.
I'm still like that. I come downstairs and I'm like, guys, showing everyone the thing. Yeah. Thanks very much, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
Okay, I'm going to throw some of those names back at you, John, and see what you think about some of these characters. The Bullet Farmer. I don't even remember that character. It's the guy who I think is Chris Hemsworth in the new one.
Yes, this one. Yeah.
Yes.
So it was like a heavy depiction of like he was a warmonger. He was definitely into that world of war. I thought with the costuming, it was so intriguing to see different villains, what they're like in this world. But that one in particular, he didn't have much time to show who he was. I mean, he got killed quickly and, you know, we didn't get time to establish him. Yeah. But what do you think about him?
I think he's really cool. I think there's a deeper lore. He clearly has some sort of beef with Furiosa. And I like that. Yeah. I like this idea that she's kind of pissed everyone off. That's really fun. Immortan Joe, we already spoke about him. And the next one is the Polecats, the people literally on the poles all the... They are so insane. I was reminded of Lord of the Rings, you know, when the Uruk-hai kind of are on the ladders and they kind of go up to Helm's Deep. It reminded me of that, but it felt so much more visceral and so much more epic.
Getting to see them on screen. This is so metal. You get to see these guys that just swinging side to side in the middle of nowhere and it's just cinema.
Yeah, no, I agree. The next one that Sam says is Rictus Erectus, which is...
Who is this guy? It's Immortan Joe's son. Gary or something, you know, like
Gary. Yes. You know what? I like Gary more. I think we should call him Gary now.
Yeah, but Gary.
He's no longer Rictus Erectus. His name is Gary.
Rictus Erectus, that was the name I had in mind. I thought it'd be like some cooler, like...
I mean, can you really get cooler than Rictus Erectus? I mean, that
Rictus
is...
Erectus. I want to know how he got that name. I want to know how he got that name. You know, like the lore building of Mad Max. And then you would hear about Rictus Erectus, like, why is he called Rick? And
his friends call him Rick, for sure. The next one here is the People Eater, which is, you know, another one of the leaders of the gang, who apparently
is a prime minister.
Apparently played by an Australian prime minister.
Yeah, that an Australian prime minister. I saw that the other day. I was crazy. Like, what? He was an Australian prime minister, which is really funny. Because imagine you just going to your local cinema in Australia somewhere, and it's like, oh, it's the old prime minister. You know, we know
that
him.
Can't be right way now. Okay, I'm looking this up now. I think that these are two different people, John. I think that Twitter has got us. I think
Twitter fooled us. No, we got the Twitter.
The final character we have here is the Doof Warrior.
He's a legend. He's a
just
legend.
Like, you know, flamethrower guitar. That is so unbelievably metal.
Oh my God. When you get to see him for the first time, oh my God. With Mad Max, anything can happen. I think that's the beauty of it. You expect the unexpected. And I think that's the joy of watching it. You know, there's so many things that are happening. I mean, it's a quick, fast paced film, as you said. It's a roller coaster.
Yeah. I feel like I have a greater appreciation for all these characters now that I know their names. Really, you know, I don't need to know anything more about these characters than what the film presents. But now I'm going to be pointing at the screen every time and be like, it's the Doof Warrior.
It's the Doof Warrior. Oh, my
that's
God.
That's so funny. Oh, thanks for the email, Sam. That's brilliant. I love obscure things like that.
Yeah. Imagine you're just walking around your day and then you get to hear George Miller be like, I've got an idea. And he's like, who the heck is the Doof Warrior? Something like that.
Yeah. He was with his friend Rick and someone was like, Rick, you're just never erect these days. And George Miller was like, Oh my God.
I can cook something with this. I can do it. Oh my God. And I'm even more excited about Furiosa. Maybe it's like the story where how they got their names. That would be funny. You know, you learn about their names. And you're just like, okay, so Joe, why is he called a Morton Joe?
I'm looking here and apparently Chris Hemsworth's character, which wouldn't make him the character from Fury Road, but his name is Dr. Dementus. That's so brilliant. That's so brilliant.
Okay, wait, Dr. Dementus?
That's his name.
Man, that's going to be like, I'm like, okay, how did you get the name? But it's kind of sound badass at the same time. It's like, Dr. Dementus.
Yeah. It's brilliant. You can't go wrong with it.
It sounds a lot like when you're playing in a Street Fighter game and you get to hear these characters' names and it's just like, I'll accept it. I'll accept the names. Yeah, we'll just go along with it. Yeah. That is Mad Max Fury Road.
Absolutely. What are you going to give it out of 10?
A 9.
Yeah, me too. It's also so close to a 10. It's one of those. Just brilliant. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe. If you want to see more, and if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, yes, we are doing Furiosa. I'm so excited for that. I'm sure it's going to be brilliant. Yeah. And you send us an email at ourstonefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Furiosa by then. And we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asbore. On Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. Jens Meyer for the excellent theme and Roman Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything.
Brilliant.
Take what you're given.
Give me back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. I thought you'd forgotten then.
I was just like, brain froze.
It's like.